I had a chance to talk with Weston Oakes on the publication of his short story collection, Multiplex Fandango, and I asked him to think back to his very earliest remembrances of writing from his imagination.
I wrote a newspaper. I think my mom took it to work, and at the time she mimeographed it with blue ink and everything, and I took it around, and I don't remember what the story was, but I remember there was a pretty violent story in there, and I was asked to go back and retrieve those. And so I went back and I pulled them all out. And it was my first chance of writing and my first time being censored. Well, my second time happened about 3 years later when we moved down to Tennessee. And I wrote a story about a boy who didn't go the straight way to school. He took a shortcut and he was eaten by a bear. And it was published in the Panther Press, the school newspaper. And that was the first time in the history of the school that the Panther Press was recalled. So my first two publications were both censored violently by first the people on the street and then I guess the PTA was the next one. And it took me about, I don't know, a dozen or so years before I wrote another word that I was willing to share with somebody else.
You know, it seems like a cautionary tale to me. I don't know why they didn't warm up to the idea.
It was a pure morality tale. Do what your mother says or you'll get eaten by a bear. I mean, mothers everywhere would love for, you know, me to tell their kids that.
Bears are the ultimate authority figure in a way.
At least they were for me.
Well, what kind of themes do you find yourself being drawn to today?
I've been accused by my peers and some fans of using redemption and retribution and responsibility, those three R's, in most things that I write. I have my own particular ideas about what type of responsibility people have. I think it's based upon my, you know, middle-class, Midwestern upbringing where everybody has a certain responsibility to everybody else regardless. And the question is, in violent times, maybe during the zombie apocalypse, what responsibility do you have to your friend if you know that his house is going to be invaded by zombies? Or should you stop? Should you save him? You know, those types of things. And by writing those things, I think, and I hope I tend to humanize a lot of the characters in my work that, you know, aren't always as human as they should be.
When you're writing, do you work linearly? Do you strictly go from beginning to end, or do you move around in the piece and create separate scenes?
Most of the time I write linearly. I go from beginning to end. I call it chronologically. But occasionally if I have a particularly hard character, I will skip scenes because especially my longer works for novels, I outline. Publishers just, they expect outlines, so I've gotten used to writing them. And they're as much a tool for me as it is a guarantee of trust for them that I know what I'm doing. My first novel, which won the Bram Stoker Award for first novel, was called Scarecrow Gods. Takes place in Tennessee and Arizona. Well, there's this character in Arizona who's a homeless man. He has voices in his head. He's sort of possessed. And to confuse the voices in his head, he speaks in nothing but anagram, palindrome, and metaphor. So to actually get into that person's head and be able to converse that way was so hard that I found myself having to do 3, 4, and 5 chapters at a time, even though they were widely spaced throughout the manuscript, just so I could stay in his thought. For instance, he would use an anagram called Evil's Agent, right? Evil's Agent. Funny enough, Evil's Agent is Evangelist. The challenge was to use the anagrams and the palindromes that actually meant something so that when he's talking to somebody, they absolutely think they understand what he's saying, but it's not until they parse it later on and they really think about it that they realize, wow, he's saying something else behind what he's saying. And so in cases like that, sure, I had to jump around. But, you know, mainly I do it chronologically.
We should tell our listeners also that you are married to an author.
I am.
And tell us about Yvonne's work and how you two have managed to combine two working writers' lives under one household.
Well, I frankly wouldn't know how a successful writer could live with someone who wasn't as creative as himself or herself. You know, Yvonne, she has 22 of her own novels, to include Buffy the Vampire Slayer, novelizations of Hellboy, Species, Elektra. She recently has the Dark Redemption series that came out from Pocket Books, starring an avenging demon that I just think is brilliant. she understands the creative process. She knows it's a private thing. We don't have stadium seating in our house so people can watch us do what we do. We go into our own little private creative spaces and we work. And sometimes it's for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a night. I would hope to think that if I was married to somebody who wasn't as creative, they would be pining and wondering when I was going to stop being creative so I could be with them. So I think the fact that she is so creative allows each of us the ability to go and do what we sometimes do best, which is, you know, create.
Well, to do what you do best, is there anything that you need? Is there a particular way you like to set up your environment when you're going to be embarking on a big writing stint?
No, and I'm a telling my wife here, she has to have everything just dressed right, dressed. She has to have things in the perfect places, and just all that stuff. Myself, I'm an old Army guy. I used to read books in the back of a tank that was rumbling over the desert. You know, I could just lose myself in pretty much anywhere. Right now, we're in the process of moving, and the downstairs where I have my office is, you know, seems kind of lonely. So I've just moved everything up to the dining room table, and I have stuff scattered everywhere. And the dogs come up and nuzzle me, and the bird yells at me from behind me, and it's fine. I can have the TV on. I can have the radio blaring. It's all good. Because I'm in my own mind, I'm in my own space.
That's interesting to me that you have a military career. Is there a dichotomy in the creative life and the military life for you?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at pop culture, everybody from Aldo Ray to John Wayne, I mean, everybody was in the military in the 1930s and 40s, right? Bob Mitchum, one of the greatest manly man actors, one of the coolest cats in Hollywood, right? He had his own couple of years. Elvis was in the military. I mean, I don't see any dichotomy whatsoever. I mean, just that I happen to be creative in addition to feeling the need to serve, you know, is just two different things. And I think I'm benefiting from the fact that I spent as much time in the military as I did. And I mean, for gosh sakes, I went to over 50 countries, you know, trying to spread the red, white, and blue, I guess. And each of those places, you know, I breathed foreign air, I tasted foreign food, I saw foreign people, and after a while, they became no longer foreign, they became a part of me. Now that stuff becomes part of my work.
You write in several different genres and in many different formats, but do you have a portrait of who your readership is?
No, I really don't. There's a knitting circle of older ladies in Tennessee that whoever I'm on the East Coast at a convention, they will travel together in their Toyota up to wherever I'm at, and they will sit around and they will knit as I'm reading horrific tales of blood and gore. I have folks who are military members who are right now in Afghanistan who are great fans. I mean, I really don't have a portrait of who the Weston fan is. For the most part, they are dreamers like myself. Most every time I have a reading, I can look out and I see people nodding their heads because they're grokking what I'm doing. You know, they totally get it, and I don't know if they go along with it or believe it, but it certainly doesn't seem like a foreign concept to them.
Tell us about an experience you had where you met your readers, maybe at a convention or something that you'll always carry with you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've encountered readers at so many different places and so many different conventions. Everybody asks for advice. Everybody wants to hear me read. I think probably the moment that resonates the very best was at a convention in Baltimore called Horrifying One. And there was about 7,500 people who showed up to that convention that just blew the socks off everybody who organized it because they did not expect it. It was myself, a whole bunch of other authors, and we had Reggie Bannister from Phantasm, we had Ken Foree from Dawn of the Dead, and we had Bruce Campbell. So those three guys brought in all these
They're the A-team, yeah, the A-team of horror conventions.
The A-team of horror conventions. It brought in all the other folks. Well, I had a co-written collection of short stories at the time called Scary Rednecks and Other Inbred Horrors, which was one of my first groupings of short stories where writing with somebody else. And I had a short story in that called The Appalachian Easter Outhouse Feud that has the Hatfields and McCoys, so to speak, on either side of a valley. And in the middle is an outhouse that is sitting on the gate of hell. And every Easter, they have to protect the world by keeping the demons from coming out. Well, to prepare for this reading, I went to the local liquor store and I bought 8 cases of natural bohemian beer, which is called Natty Bo back there. And I went to a thrift store and bought 3 large 7-gallon bags of dollar Cheetos. And I made sure that everybody got liquored up and they were throwing the Cheetos by the time I started reading the story. And you know, people still talk about that because I'm reading it, everyone's laughing, they're drinking, they're throwing Cheeto balls at everybody. And it was one of those times where the audience absolutely felt like they were part of the creative process and the whole experience. So there's a lot of memorable times, but I think that's one of the better ones.
And you know who's still talking about it also is the cleanup staff.
Well, you know, I'm sorry for them.
That was dark fantasy and horror author Weston Oakes. This upcoming November will bring with it two milestones in his life. He'll continue his 27-year military career with a tour of duty in Afghanistan, and he'll see the publication of his new novel, SEAL Team 666, which follows the adventures of a special operations force designed to deal with supernatural threats.